Support for MPB comes from the Mississippi Museum of Art in Jackson. What Became of Dr. Smith by artist Noah Satterstrom is on view beginning April 20th. Learn more at msmuseumart.org.
This podcast is a local production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting and depends on the support of listeners like you. If you can, please donate today at mpbonline.org. And thanks.
Hi, I'm Sarah Story, the Executive Director of the Mississippi Arts Commission. Welcome to the Mississippi Arts Hour, a weekly conversation with creative Mississippians from across the state. We talk to artists, musicians, authors, and community workers who support the arts in their community. Today, I'm talking with Benjamin Salisbury, the Museum Director of the Emmett Till Interpretive Center in Sumner, Mississippi. Welcome, Benjamin.
Oh, thanks for having us, Sarah. Thank you.
Absolutely. We're just so thrilled to have you on the show today, and I'm just excited to learn more about what's going on in Sumner, Mississippi, and with the Emmett Till Interpretive Center. And then a little bit later on, we're just excited to hear more about you guys' new grant that you just got from the Mellon Foundation.
Great. Happy to share with you all. Looking forward to it.
So I'd love to start off by just for, you know, maybe people that don't know the story of Emmett Till very well or haven't heard the story in a while, do you mind just sharing that history?
Sure. Yes, ma'am. So it was the summer of 1955, talking about August 1955. And just to expedite, the disinterpretation, there are bits and pieces that I'll be sharing. But basically, in the latter part of August of 1955, a young man by the name of Emmett Lewis Till was visiting family members in the Mississippi Delta, Money, Mississippi, to be a little bit more precise. During his visit, he, along with Reverend Willa Parker, for whom is his cousin and the late Simeon Wright, stopped at Brian's Grocery and Meat Market, which is in Money, Mississippi, where Emmett, based off of the account given by Reverend Willa Parker and the late Simeon Wright, whistled at Carolyn Bryant. Approximately 3 days later from the time of the wolf whistle, the home of Mose Wright, who was the caregiver and relative of Emmett and Reverend Willa Parker, was visited invaded upon by Roy Bryant and his half-brother, J.W. Milam. They would then go on to abduct Emmett Till out of the home of Mose Wright, for whom he was never seen alive again. Approximately 3 days after the abduction, Emmett's body was recovered from the Tallahatchie River. And from the point of the recovery of his body to the now somewhat famous or infamous trial that took place in Sumner, in September 1955, a not guilty verdict was rendered, and these two men were acquitted. A few months later, their confession and their account of things was then published in Look magazine, which, again, also in 56, you have, in our neighboring state of Alabama, the bus boycott of Montgomery going on. We'll probably get into this, but there is a direct correlation between the murder and acquittal, well, the murder of Emmett Till and the acquittal of these two men, and the civil rights movement. But again, to kind of help save with time, we can get into that at another part of discussion, possibly.
Great. Well, thank you for sharing that. It's a tough story to hear, but it's so important to remember and speak about, and especially for the community that you're in. So tell us a little bit more about the Emmett Till Interpretive Center. How did that come about? What was the purpose, et cetera?
Great. So excuse me. So you have the civil rights movement of the 50s and 60s, and to a measurable extent, you see progress and change in a lot of different places, right? Black folk get the right to vote. You're seeing laws being passed that kind of help protect those rights. And you're seeing, again, progress on a societal level as the years and decades go by. But with that being said, it wasn't until the mid-2000s that our community, the Tallahatchie County community, began to publicly and and intentionally talk about race and racism and what racial reconciliation could look like. And so this process gave way through the creation of the Emmett Till Memorial Commission, which was spearheaded by a gentleman named Jerome G. Little, well, the late Jerome G. Little. He and, again, the cohort that would become the commission was comprised of 18 citizens, black and white, all of whom were from Tallahatchie County, all of whom had working memory of that time being the time for which the trial took place. And over the course of about a year, maybe not quite a whole year, these folk, along with a few others in our community, came together through the help and the assistance of the William Winters Institute to try to work through what it meant, you know, what it means to grow up in a community and in a social climate is the one that they did, but to do it for, but to have those conversations, not just to point blame, not just to, have moments of crying or frustration, but to really look inward, right? And look inward together and then try to harness those truths that are shared into something that, you know, is progressive and positive. So in 2007, the commission created a resolution slash apology that was given to members of the Till family, and it was presented on the courtyard steps, and that helped kind of be a springboard for the restoration of the courthouse. And the importance of that is they wanted to have something tangible to give way to the work of the commission, right? It's one thing to say, I'm sorry, but the reality of the matter is, you have a child that was murdered, you have a mother that spent the rest of her life seeking justice on behalf of her son and others. And so saying, I'm sorry, just kind of falls short, right? And so our community our community understood that in addition to writing these words on paper, we needed to try to live that out. And so the restoration of the courthouse became one of the ways for which we wanted to live out the apology. We wanted to create a space, or rather create spaces and environments that acknowledge our history, but also acknowledge our resolve to be better to each other going forward. So the process from the time of the apology being in 2007 up to the opening of the courthouse in 2015 helped us realize, well, in addition to that, we need to have a space or spaces that deal with sharing this narrative, that of the Emmett Till tragedy, but also our own reckoning or our own coming together narrative as a county and community. And that would serve, and as a result of that, that's kind of how and why the Emmett Till Interpretive Center showed up.
That's amazing. Well, that's just so cool to hear. And we're just so grateful to have this important space in our state and in that community. So how did you get involved with the Emmett Till Interpretive Center? Are you from the area? Did you grow up with the story, or is this new for you?
Yeah, great question. So I'm a native. I'm a Delta native. I am a, country boy through and through, born and raised in Tallahatchie County, about a mile or so outside of Sumner, Mississippi. So, the history concerning that space, and when I say that space, I mean the courthouse and its ties to this tragedy, and in some ways its ties to this national narrative of the past and even present, has always been a part of, I guess, my upbringing. I, being a native of the area, I went to the local high school, which is West Tallahatchie High School, part of the graduating class 2003. I did my undergrad at MVSU, completed it in 2008. Still being very closely tied to family, friends, and others from the area. It wouldn't be until around 2016, however, that I would find myself working with the Emmett Till Interpretive Center directly. And so I kind of came on board actually as a volunteer, and then as time progressed, my office and capacity of service has changed, along with the growth and continued work of the Interpretive Center. But yeah, I'm definitely a native of the county and community, but I got my start officially with the Interpretive Center March 2016, believe it or not.
That's awesome. Well, happy anniversary then.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's great.
Much.
So tell us a little bit more about what the Interpretive Center does today. You guys do some programs. You know, what's going on there now?
Sure. So I'll speak to at least the programming prior to COVID. And then to some extent, I'll speak to the pivot in, you know, post-COVID or during COVID. So ultimately, what we aim to do is uplift the memory and legacy of Mamie Till Mobley and Emmett. And we want to do that not just by, I mean, one of the ways that has been done is to engage visitors with this narrative. But then another point of engagement that we work towards is by reaching out to the youth in our community or in adjacent communities and engaging them also in the Emmett and Mamie Till narrative, but then also in civil rights and also emphasizing to them the fact that, without a doubt, you do have those, more prolific figures of the civil rights being, Dr. King and Rosa Parks. But the other reality around that is the civil rights movement was made off of people who never made the history books. And that it was made off of, young folk, their age, teenagers and whatnot, that, that organized and came together to try to make a lasting difference in their world. And that, that they can see themselves in progress and in change and in working together. And that they are, to be the best stewards possible of their own narratives and their own stories. And so we try to express that through the arts. And one of the ways in particular that we have in times past has been through the creation of photo documentaries. And so we've been able to host summer programs that engage youth in the creation of their own stories by way of photo documentaries and in sharing those stories with the community in the courtroom or in the center. But that work has now kind of expanded in some ways into, we still continue that, right? We still want to engage youth and others with the arts and using the arts as a way to try to, heal past traumas while also, reimagining new narratives and things of that nature. But in addition to those, to that particular program or that particular activity or project, we're looking at ways to develop, curriculum that deals specifically with the Emmett Till narrative. And finding ways to help engage schools and districts in Mississippi and, and everywhere else to kind of give even greater emphasis to the impact that the life and legacy of Emmett and Mamie Till have absolutely had here and arguably all around the world.
This is Sarah Story, the Executive Director of the Mississippi Arts Commission. You are listening to the podcast version of the Mississippi Arts Hour. To have access to all Arts Hour interviews, subscribe to the podcast using your favorite podcasting app. You can also listen to the show on MPB Think Radio every Sunday afternoon at 5 p.m.
Contractor ever tell you the price of something and it sounds so high you think, maybe I'll try it myself? Some jobs just aren't that difficult, and yes, you can do it. If you want to find out how to do those things, listen to Fix It 101, podcast everywhere.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
Welcome back to the Mississippi Arts Hour on MPB Think Radio. Today, we have Benjamin Salisbury, the museum director of the Emmett Till Interpretive Center in Sumner, Mississippi. Thanks again so much for being here with us, Ben.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine, Sarah. Thank you for having us.
So before the break, we were discussing the programming that you guys do throughout the community of Sumner, Mississippi, but then also you guys do curriculum development that goes probably all over the world, I would guess.
Well, I mean, we're in extremely, and I do want to emphasize extremely early stages of that. Mm-hmm. Like that's part of the digital pivot, right? Because prior to, prior to COVID, we had a lot of face-to-face interaction and a lot of visitors and also our center serves as a community space. And so the community, that space, it was open for community to share whatever, whatever programming some of our other organizations in the area have. We avail this space to community as well as, from time to time hosting other meetings and whatnot that dealt directly with community issues and matters, education and otherwise. But again, due to COVID, we've had to take a much, we've had to consider going using some of the, various digital platforms to engage and re-engage others. Last year, one of the, I think one of the highlights of the digital pivot was being able to host readings from different writers, some of whom were poets, and I think one of whom was a poet laureate during the summer of last year that garnished a lot of visitors and attentions in, in one of the Zoom rooms, so to speak. And you know, our intent is to continue to engage folks locally and abroad, right? Like community is not just the very proximal location of Sumner, Webb, Tutwiler, although they are without a doubt, but our view of community is, all of whom who care about the memory of Mehmet, and, of Emmett and Mamie Till Mobley, but then also those who care about looking for ways to engage honestly and truthfully concerning racial reconciliation, and then also trying to find and cultivate the ways to process that, whether it's, person to person or, on a much larger scale. So, the digital pivot in some ways has helped that. It's forced us to definitely, promote our app, the Emmett Till Memory Project, which gives visitors an opportunity to go to different sites that are tied to the Emmett Till narrative in Tallahatchie County, well, in Delta, Mississippi, as well as a few sites in the Chicago area. And we've explored using social media and other platforms to help, again, uplift the memory of Emmett and Mamie, while also calling people to kind of look inward and taking into account where we are as a society, but then where we are as individuals and what we can do to try to make the world a little bit better.
Absolutely. Well, that's great that you guys have been able to shift to more digital platforms. Did you guys have to close during for a while during COVID? Are you still closed? What's going on now at the Interpretive Center?
Yeah, great question, Sarah. So we've closed from having visitors, right? And in large part because because of COVID. But sure. Specifically around COVID is the fact that in our county and community, even prior to COVID, we have our struggles and obstacles concerning healthcare and access to healthcare and having to go 20 plus miles sometimes to get to anything, especially a hospital or this or that. And so we just felt it. We just believed that for our community, for our organization, it was probably the safest thing. The safest thing to do would be to suspend visitors until we've kind of gotten a much better handle and containment on COVID here and regionally. And so we believe that we can safely reopen later this year, and we're in the process of making that a reality even now.
That's great to hear.
Yes, ma'am.
So. I'm really excited. It was national news that you guys got one of the five coveted grants from the Mellon Foundation for what they're calling the Monuments Project. And so I printed out the description so I could read it for our listeners that may not be familiar with the project. So I'll read that, and then we want to hear more about how Emmett Till Interpretive Center is going to use these funds in the community. So this is the description from the Mellon Foundation. Statues are not just bodies in bronze, and monuments are not just stone pillars. They instruct. They lift up the stories of those who are seen, dominate the stories of those who are unseen, and too often propagate menacingly incomplete accounts of our country's past. So I'd love to hear more about how you guys found out about this opportunity, what you're thinking through, how you want to grow, what you guys are doing with this incredible grant support.
Yeah, great question again, Sarah. So going back just a little bit, I believe it was the summer of 2019 when the world sort of made sense. myself and our executive director, Patrick Weems, were speaking to a group that were visiting in the Tallahatchie County Courthouse in Sumner. And if my memory serves me correctly, and I think it does, one of the persons in the audience worked with or worked for Mellon. And so after we shared what, you know, our work and shared our story, that person, just to kind of speed this up, that person made contact with us about possibly submitting a proposal to their foundation. And thankfully, you know, we were able to do that. Unfortunately, COVID kind of interrupted the process in some ways. But in spite of COVID, we were able to kind of, again, you know, I think us choosing to still try to find ways to engage and be true to who we are and why we are as an organization and also as community members, you know, we were kind of, I think that helped us stay appropriately positioned to, you know, to be able to submit this proposal. And thankfully, the proposal was accepted. And you know, this, you know, and with its acceptance, it's going to help us, you know, it's definitely going to help sustain us while we, you know, possibly, well, not possibly, but probably expand our, you know, expand our capacity a little bit. But then also, it's going to help us engage community. It's going to help us do exactly what that grant speaks to, which is appropriate commemoration. One of the sites in particular that we're looking at further interpretation of, or more permanent interpretation of, is again absolutely targeted to be a site where a much more permanent fixture is there, and not just for the reason and purposes of sharing, you know, the tragic component to, you know, to the Emmett Till narrative, but to be a call for education, right, and a call for people coming together to learn and grow together. And we believe that done the right way, commemorative work or commemorative, done the right way, acts and arts of commemoration have a way of speaking to people that goes, you know, just a little bit further than spoken word. And that's not a knock or diss against spoken word, but again, we are, you know, to the best of our ability, we want to use the arts and we want to use the spaces that make up who and what we are as a community to kind of help share where we are as a society, and that those truths aren't just a Tallahatchie County truth, that the things that Tallahatchie County and other places and even Mississippi in a lot of ways have faced is not alien to the rest of society. But, and that's, you know, that's what it is. But the good news is we're not at the mercy of history. We can learn from history. And so cultivating and or creating spaces for commemoration then becomes a call to remembering where we come from, but then working to making the future, you know, that much better. And so that proposal and being accepted with, you know, from Mellon helps us figure out the best ways to do that. So we're, you know, privileged, excited, and looking forward to doing this work while also engaging community in the upcoming, you know, months and arguably, you know, years or so in commemoration, and how that commemoration can possibly spur community and others to, you know, to look inward yet again and call for a change here. And hopefully that serves as a model for other places in Mississippi and, dare I say, around the country.
Absolutely. Well, it's definitely been a conversation worldwide, especially over this past year with the Black Lives Matter movement and just all the horrible deaths that we've seen. Did that change the work that you guys did any last year when all of that was happening, or were you guys already pretty much talking about it and had it top of mind anyway?
Yeah. So, you know, I don't want to come off as if we have a monopoly on the space, and by no means are we trying to, you know, play or compete in the oppression Olympics, right? But, well, I mean, there's no but to that. That's just what that is. With that being said, when the events that took place last year, especially you know, the murder of Breonna Taylor, and then, you know, the murder of George Floyd, you know, that, you know, those tragic events, you know, sp- spoke to and in some ways speak to, speak to a reality that has been present long before last year. And I think in some ways things have come to a head as a result of those tragic events, making national news. But for us, it continues to serve as a clear indication as to why there's a need for an interpretive center, right? And not just because, you can do a project that points to the bad things, but we want to try to do the best we can to uplift the importance of those who have a mind and a heart and a will to look at the world around them and then look at themselves to then try to find ways to make it better. We don't dare act as if we have the answers because we don't, right? Like we're not the experts, so to speak, but we do believe and to some extent can attest to the potential a place or a people can tap into when they choose to be very intentional and deliberate around coming together and working through processes through the arts and or just through person-to-person dialogue with solutions in mind. So when the murders of George Floyd happened and Breonna Taylor and people being found, hanging from trees last summer and whatnot, when that became prevalent, it further affirmed our resolve to continue to do the work and for the purposes that the work exists on our behalf to begin with.
This is Sarah Story, the Executive Director of the Mississippi Arts Commission. You are listening to the podcast version of the Mississippi Arts Hour. To have access to all Arts Hour interviews, subscribe to the podcast using your favorite podcasting app. You can also listen to the show on MPB Think Radio every Sunday afternoon at 5 p.m.
Hello, I'm Dr. Nancy Lottridge Anderson, president of New Perspectives, a fee-only financial advising firm and co-host of Money Talks. For over 10 years, Money Talks has been answering your personal financial questions and sharing knowledge about money management. Money Talks can be heard Tuesdays at 9 a.m. on MPB Think Radio. Podcasts can be found on our website, money.mpbonline.org, or on your smart device's podcasting platform.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
Welcome back to the Mississippi Arts Hour on MPB Think Radio. Today, we're joined with Benjamin Salisbury, the museum director of the Emmett Till Interpretive Center in Sumner, Mississippi. So we've been talking about the Emmett Till Interpretive Center, its new grant from the Mellon Foundation that'll allow the work that they're doing in Sumner to expand and grow, which is super exciting. What else is going on that you guys have been working on that you're excited about right now, Ben?
Yeah, looking at the safest ways to reopen is absolutely one of the highlights and one of the most, I don't want to say time consuming, but it's definitely something that has required some real thought and some real for lack of a better word, research, because we want to do that. That's kind of how we started, and thankfully, COVID is taking a turn that would allow us to not just have those conversations, but to actually see it come to fruition. So reopening is a big thing, but also possibly being able to host our summer event, our summer youth program event or a fellowship program is a very big deal for us. Along with finding those other ways to continue to engage in Tallahatchie County and some of the surrounding areas. So those are a few of the things that we're looking at and working on at present.
That's great. That's exciting that it's finally time to even consider a reopening plan.
Yeah.
So before this worldwide pandemic, what does your visitorship look like? Is it mostly local people? Do you have people coming out of town to see the center? What does that look like for the Emmett Till Interpretive Center?
Oh, that's a wonderful question, Sarah. So prior to COVID, I guess it depends how you ask, right? Like a lot of our visitors to the sites, right? And by sites, I mean center, courthouse, and some of those other, some of the other points to, you know, to visit that are directly tied to the Teal narrative. A lot of those visitors were either from people from different parts of Mississippi, but then also just a wide range of other visitors from other parts of the country, and even having international visitors from time to time. Our international visitors was probably, you know, the smallest demographic, but still a measurable one, wherein I think the largest visiting pool varied from age, walks of life, whether they were youth or church groups, or just, you know, a family or individuals that, you know, that had an interest in civil rights and how the Emmett Till story is part, you know, an integral part of, you know, the American civil rights story. And then just a few other, you know, demographics, you know, in between those places and spaces, even folks that, you know, that do work in the Delta from time to time, they visited to have conversations with us, not just around, I mean, those conversations dealt with our work and how it's tied to the Emmett Till tragedy, but then how the culture impacts customs and practices in the places they work. So, yeah, I mean, the visiting pool varied and is very diverse. And so, we're looking forward to, again, reopening and seeing how post-COVID, our visiting demographic will play out short-term and long.
That's great. And so in the Interpretive Center, you mentioned that you guys act as a community center as well. What other types of, so for people who aren't as familiar with smaller town Mississippi, you know, many, many times spaces like yours act as all sorts, you know, a space for all sorts of different activities. Tell Absolutely. Us, give, paint us a picture of what that looks like for Sumner, Mississippi.
So Sumner, Mississippi is a town with a population of, I'm going to be conservative and say approximately 300, maybe 315, depending on what day of the week you ask, somewhere in there. to give a little bit of historical background, in 1955, the population of Sumner was a little bit over 500. So wow. It's never been, you know, like a huge or densely populated location. But again, the citizenship, or at least the numbers off of, I want to say 2010 census and such, is around a 300, 320, somewhere in there. With that being said, the county, right, Tallahatchie County, has a population of less than 14,000 people. And so the county is comprised of you have Sumner, Webb, Tutwiler. You also have Charleston, probably being the largest of our towns in Tallahatchie County. You have Glendora, and then you have like those, you know, just the subsets of those areas. So having said that, you would all in our community, or rather speaking about the center and how it has served town-wise and in some ways county-wise, it has been a place where in times past, folks could visit on a weekly basis to learn more about things to look out for as a first-time parent, which was a program. I mean, so the program was known as, I think, it was Baby University, and that program, you know, kind of gave folks a little bit of things to look out for and be mindful of, you know, when you have a toddler, when you have a newborn, and things of that nature. And then later that week, you would have, you know, an AA group that would use the building to host their meetings. And then depending on the time of the year, of course, you would have, you know, summer youth fellowship workers that, in addition to learning about the Teal narrative, sometimes they would even give tours and lead facilitation conversations with our visitors. And so in addition to that, periodically you would have other community members that would use the space either for to host meetings around whatever community issue or matter that was going on, town, school, et cetera. But then sometimes you also had folks that would just use the building for social events, whether it was, like a reception for a wedding or a repass or just a number of events. I think people in relatively larger towns take for granted because, you know, they have buildings that serve a very specific purpose. But and hopefully maybe one day, you know, that'll change. But as of right now, thankfully, prior to COVID, we've been able to, you know, this building has served, in addition to the direct programmatic stuff we've done, it's been, an ally and been able to serve as a place to assist community members and some of their community needs when it comes to just knowing that there is a space available that will allow them to kind of do whatever, do the good work that they're doing in whatever capacity that is.
That's great. Well, I'd love to learn more about the fellowship program that you mentioned. So that's a summer youth fellowship program. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so in years past and possibly this year, fingers crossed, right? I don't wanna tell y'all it's happening in the end. Oh goodness, it can't happen. But if all things go the way we hope them to go, this program is one that usually lasts anywhere between 6 to 8 weeks during the summer months. So anywhere between like the latter part of June or very early July to first or second week of August, or sometimes from June, middle of June to about the middle of July, somewhere in there, whatever 6 to 8 weeks that works for everybody that's going to be a part of it. We engage youth, in the area. Well, the majority of them have been in the area. We don't discourage any youth for applying or trying to participate, but the majority of the youth that we've been able to engage with have been in our very local, been local teenagers in middle school to to freshman, early undergrad folk in the area. And so, again, that program is one that, where we, or specifically whoever, our youth coordinator will speak very directly to the fellowship participants around a number of things, whether it's the Emmett Till narrative or the Emmett and Mamie Till narrative, but then also sometimes we would use current events, right, and give the youth a space to kind of share their thoughts on things and try to engage them in critical thinking around how we're connected to history and how sometimes we're not nearly as far removed from things of the past as we think. And that's not necessarily the worst thing in the world, because just as sure as you have examples of young folk and others coming together and working together to try to help make impacts in their community, they too can do the same thing. But, and it's one thing to say that, but, because we try to emphasize the use of the arts, the medium or the media for which we've used in times past has been photo documentaries and having folk that are way better at it than I am come in for a week or two or however long they're able to assist us in this process, engage youth in the technicals concerning how to actually capture a picture or how to actually use that medium to share a story and share a perspective that possibly or probably wouldn't be known otherwise. And then kind of giving them the space, to narrate and or have other folks that are part of the narratives that they're sharing narrate their work, and then they expound on that to the community at large. In our efforts to continue that while also looking at ways to possibly expand that, we're looking at other potential partners to work with, some of whom being, again, in the county community, but arguably and possibly folk that are a part of adjourning or connected counties, because we know that for one, the Emmett Till narrative is one that is not Tallahatchie County exclusive. We know that there are in this space alone, it also involves LaFleur County and Sunflower County, but and that's just the lowest of hanging fruit. And so we're looking at ways to be true to that reality when it comes to how we engage youth and other community members, whether they're in the Tallahatchie County community or not. So yeah, we think, fingers crossed, but we believe that possibly this summer we will be able to host this program again, even if we have to look at other technologies to kind of help facilitate the conversations and the time spent with with the fellowship participants and those that would help them with the creation of the photo documentaries.
That's wonderful. Really neat to hear. So how has, have you seen the community change, the community surrounding Interpretive Center change with the opportunities that you've provided them to have these discussions, to have these, you know, hard conversations, to create a public apology for the history? Have you seen any changes in the community, or is it?
Yeah, so, you know, I want to be very mindful and careful when I say, well, with whatever I say concerning change. I want to be, and not that I haven't been honest, right? Because, you know, I try to be an honest person. And this kind of work, you know, we absolutely do the best we can to uplift the truth and uplift truth telling, while also living that out. Right, mm-hmm. It's one thing to say it; a whole other thing to exhibit it. Right, mm-hmm. and to do that, you know, again on purpose. So, a couple of examples that I could give, or at least surface examples I can give, is the fact that, you know, in 1955, this square that the Interpretive Center is headquartered in, or headquartered, you know, was like almost an exclusively, you know, white business square. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, I wasn't there in 1955, so, but having said that, I know, right? Sometimes some mornings I question, but that's a whole nother interview. That's a whole nother, you know, Sunday conversation. But all jokes aside, there was a time where it wasn't just a sentiment. Looking at the demographic of the square, it would be somewhat easy to draw the conclusion that this is a place and space where Black businesses seldomly had an opportunity to, you know, to open. The Black dollars to some extent were welcomed, but having Black folk or businesses owned by Black folk in this space was just really not high. You know, the likelihood of it, let's say the likelihood of it was very low. From the time of the apology to the opening of the Interpretive Center and the reopening of the courthouse or courtroom and courthouse, we've been able to see businesses owned by African-American women from the area. And so with that, you know, seeing that play out and having those businesses patronized, I think serves as one of the most immediate examples for which we can point to change. Now, again, I would be remiss to present what has taken place on the square and or, you know, in our county and community. If I told you that, you know, that we had it all figured out, that we were a utopic society and all that good stuff, I would be flat out lying. Mm-hmm. And y'all didn't call me to lie to y'all. And I try to make it a point not to do that, no way. But I can speak to the fact, I can speak to the belief that I and the other team members have, being Patrick Weems and Elliot Long, that, you know, that it is our desire, again, to continue to position people to give real thought to the spaces we all share and how we can share those spaces in a way that absolutely promotes progress, equity, and the belief in one another and how that plays out short-term and long-term.
This is Sarah Story, the Executive Director of the Mississippi Arts Commission. You are listening to the podcast version of the Mississippi Arts Hour. To have access to all Arts Hour interviews, subscribe to the podcast using your favorite podcasting app. You can also listen to the show on MPB Think Radio every Sunday afternoon at 5 p.m.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jimmy Stewart, Professor of Internal Medicine and Pediatrics at the University of Mississippi Medical Center. On the original Southern Remedy, we answer questions about all aspects of your health and share some of the latest medical information in the news. You can listen to the show on Wednesdays at 11 on MPB Think Radio, or you can subscribe to the podcast by searching for Southern Remedy on your preferred podcasting app.